It's hour number two of Shirts and Skins with Chad and Trey. At 1:45, where are we at in society? I play a part of my most recent podcast episode on a book that empowers people in pain to address their issues. You do want to stay tuned for that one. At 1:30, the Mets fire their GM because he was a GD creep to a female reporter 5 or so years ago. And in mere minutes, Texas may have found their next defensive coordinator. I'm Trey Elling, and sitting across from me is Chad Hastings.
Hour number two on a Tuesday. I will be honest with you on this Tennessee story. I haven't read through it all yet, but there's a story rolling around today that, and apparently this isn't just somebody joking around. Like, there's a story that one of the violations they're looking into in Knoxville is that recruits, Trey, got money that had been placed into a McDonald's bag.
Jeez, Tennessee, can you go a little bit less cliche, like, with your dirty dealings?
Like, at least it wasn't a true paper bag like you might get at the liquor store, but...
No, I'm better with that than a McDonald's bag.
Yeah, it's true.
I would probably rather have a burlap sack with a money sign on the side of it than a McDonald's bag.
Like an old school Batman.
Exactly.
Like in the Adam West Batman where everything in the bank was labeled with a big dollar sign.
That's it.
Oh my God, I don't know that I've ever heard of a McDonald's bag. I've heard of duffel bags. I've heard of like rolls of tape. It was a 30 for 30 that I'd never heard of this idea before. They would give guys rolls of tape in a bag, and then the money was rolled inside the tape.
So it just like a toilet paper dispenser?
It just looked like athletic tape, but yeah, inside there. It was actually tape, but then inside the spool, they would make it money.
Wow.
I mean, you can go a lot of ways, but apparently Tennessee was going that way. And for you Jason Bourne fans out there, it would appear today that the possible Pamela Landy for Tennessee to tie this all around their neck and chunk them in the river if they need to might be Jason Witten. Oh, good God. Jason, as a Cowboys fan, I love you way too much for you to do that. Please say no. Please say no to them. They are setting you up.
How does Jason Witten continue getting opportunities of this magnitude when he probably needs to cut his teeth at a lesser level first?
I think everyone will assume that if Jason Witten hands you a McDonald's bag, it's got a Big Mac in it, not a wad of money. They trust him. They trust Jason Witten.
Okay.
That's what it'll be.
Do you want somebody who's that trustworthy right now? Don't you need to deal a little bit dirty, but just be smarter about it in the SEC?
Probably do. Speaking of the SEC, the Longhorns' new player personnel guy is coming from the SEC. We'll get to him. But now it appears that things have zoomed in on one particular DC possibility for Texas. It would appear that Pete Golding is just... Wait, both these guys' names are Pete, now that I think about it, right? Is that true?
Yeah.
Pete Golding, the DC at Alabama. You would think maybe we'd heard that we'd heard that Nick Saban likes him. Pete Carroll might too. But that Nick Saban likes him and maybe now likes him enough to keep him around in Tuscaloosa. Because today, the name that is out there that will be pronounced 900 different ways is Pete Kwiatkowski, the defensive coordinator at Washington. He's been there since 2014. He runs the death row defense, and he sent multiple guys to the league. Trey, let me read you some stats from West Coast College Football on Twitter. The resume: top two DCs in college football, according to this site. Who knows how they're calculating that? 8 top 15 defenses in 11 seasons. Number 1 Pac-12 defense in 5 of the past 6 years. 75 straight games without allowing more than 35 points. I'm going to say that again because that one sounds like a Big 12. That could help you. 75 straight games without allowing more than 35 points.
And the one time I can think of where they allowed 35 was against a pretty dynamic Penn State offense in the Rose Bowl a few years back.
Okay, and that's a current active streak. And then 10 first or second round draft picks at UW with 3 more projected in the 2021 draft. The folks out west really dig him, Trey. So if they are overcooking him, I guess that's possible. If they're overselling their boy, that's possible. But just from that perspective, if I'm a Texas fan, I kind of like it. Now, it's got to all fit together, and he's got to be able to run a good defense, and it's got to fit in the Big 12 and all of that. But if you're going off of the reputation you're hearing from the region, nobody seems to be joking on this idea. They are going to be sad to lose him.
And it sounds like, at least according to Eric Nahlin, who reported that Sark was on a Zoom call very recently mentioning Kwiatkowski by name, saying that he's excited to have him because he's a pain in the ass to play against.
Yeah.
Looks like Gideon, who will not only help coach special teams along with Jeff Banks, is also going to be a DB coach. And Joseph will, in fact, slide outside to the cornerback position. Kwiatkowski will serve as at least one half of the linebackers coach. He traditionally, in his defense, the 2-4-5 or 2-2-2-5, however you want to look at it, with the outside and inside linebackers separate, will be responsible for the outside linebackers. So they have one hole to fill on the coaching staff, and that would be the inside linebackers coaching position.
Gotcha. And if you have that list in front, what is Joseph's first name? I cannot remember that guy's first name.
Is it Terry?
Terry Joseph. Thank you. Thank you. I think you're right. Coming together for Texas. And I think at this point, again, to be official right now, only Steve Sarkisian is an official name. The university hasn't even put Kyle Flood's name out there yet, have they?
I don't know if they have or not, but here's the thing about this. Usually the university is the last to admit what's going on at this point.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm just trying to be specific and right. Just let everybody know. If you're one of those people that wants to hear the university say it before you think it's done, only Sark is at that point. But now with this, if you're telling me Sark's on a Zoom call and he says great to have him,
right.
I mean, this is getting done. So it's going to be Coach Pete as the DC, it would appear.
And I feel like the university oftentimes smartly waits until everybody's in place to actually send out that release.
Yeah.
To say, these guys are on offense, these guys are on defense, rather than having to bombard media emails with every time a position coach is hired.
And the way they used to do that, it made so much sense in the regular world before COVID, because what they used to do is when you announced all your new guys, let's say you had five new guys at once, you'd announce it and then have one press conference where all five guys show up. Now you can't do that, but maybe still they want to be able to say, look, here it is. We're all going to be out recruiting. We're all going to be out doing whatever it is. So just throw it all out at one time. But now this has been the big discussion, kind of rolling around a couple different people. And Trey, you mentioned it. He said on this Zoom call, apparently, he's a pain in the ass to play against. That apparently is why he liked Zach Arnett at Mississippi State. Even though they thrashed Mississippi State this year at Alabama, they thrashed everybody. They beat them like 41-0. But apparently something about facing his defense stood out to Steve Sarkisian the last 2 years. And this apparently would be the same thing. So I was asking earlier about what's the connection. This is a Chris Peterson guy. He was not at UW with Sarkisian. Maybe it is simply that. In the self-scout of Steve Sarkisian, he realizes, okay, what defenses bug me? What defenses bugged me as an OC? And apparently this is one of them. Maybe they know each other. Maybe they don't. I don't know what the relationship may be. We'll find that out. Yeah. But apparently this is that's the way he's going to go, and maybe the kind of the logic he used.
A friend of the show, Joe Cook, joins these airwaves every Monday at 1 o'clock, shed some light on that over at Inside Texas a little bit earlier today, saying that his first real experience in going up against a Kwiatkowski defense was when he was an offensive analyst for Alabama in 2016.
Okay.
When Alabama and Washington squared off in the Peach Bowl with a trip to the national championship game on the line, and the Washington defense held that high-powered Bama offense to their second lowest point total of the year.
Okay.
24 points. Now, Alabama still wins the game 24-7 because Washington wasn't great on offense, but the only other time they scored fewer points than that in that 2016 season was the 10 points they put up against LSU when they shut the Tigers out.
Gotcha. 2016, I believe that would be the season where Clemson beats them in the close one at the end.
So.
And that's Sarkisian
taking over.
Takes over for Lane Kiffin.
Kiffin after that game.
That's Lane trained throughout the year. Sarkisian, so he's really, really hanging back that year as an analyst, watching everything, and that's where he picked it up. That's interesting. Good work there, Joe Cook. I love hearing little details like that. Somewhere, when Kevin Dunn hears that story about a Peach Bowl back in the day, he's going to love it. Kevin's my favorite guy for coaching connections. He's going to love that it sources all the way back to something like that.
And another factoid from Joe's article at Inside Texas. Again, you can go to InsideTexas.com to check out all their great work over there. Another skin on the wall for Kwiatkowski in terms of identifying and developing a guy who turns into a pretty good pro.
Yes, sir.
On your Dallas Cowboys.
Yes, sir.
When he was with Boise State, DeMarcus Lawrence was under his tutelage.
Oh, that's a good name to throw out. I'd throw him on my resume if I could. Shaq Thompson has been mentioned today.
That's right.
He's another guy at UW. And like I said earlier, if you count them up, 16 guys are playing in the NFL right now that he had something to do with in college.
Now, to give proper credit to Jimmy Lake, who was a DB's guy before his ultimate elevation to co-DC and then head coach for Washington, a lot of the current NFL guys that played for the Huskies were in the secondary that was really controlled and helmed by Jimmy Lake.
And speaking of secondary, we mentioned that also in that Zoom call, the fact that Sarkisian's mentioning Blake Gideon, mentioning Coach Joseph at cornerbacks, the coming from Notre Dame, apparently those are going to happen, and it looks like that it will be Coach Pete coming from Washington, and people have been trying to throw it out. If you're going to go with the Kwiatkowski, then people have suggested Quiet Riot, maybe Quiet Storm, something with Quiet in it for the defense's nickname. But you got to earn that around here, Trey. You can't have nicknames before game one.
Quiet but deadly?
Maybe not. Maybe not. I would keep thinking. I would keep thinking on that. Nobody wants that. QBD? You put that on a shirt?
Yeah.
Come on, man. That's funny. That is
funny. Hesitate to even like get close to that person.
Whoa, I don't even get near that defense. The one guy we haven't mentioned a lot, let's just kind of fill it out. This isn't coaching staff particular, but Derek Chang, we mentioned the other day, is not going to be back. So Texas does have a new player personnel guy. And Trey, he has a lot of SEC experience. And apparently it's important to Steve Sarkisian that part of that experience was at, you guessed it, Alabama. He was at Tennessee a little bit. He was at Florida. He was at Bama. Most recently, he was there in South Carolina for what was, I'm sure, an entertaining year. From Muschamp to Beamer. But apparently he's a pretty good recruiter and a guy that understands recruiting player personnel and all of that. So has some experience, obviously, in a big-time conference. Drew Hughes is his name. Drew Hughes is going to be the new director of player personnel, reportedly, for Steve Sarkisian.
There is a high bar set up for him to clear to do the job the way that you would hope that he's capable of. Because Derek Chang, for the faults that this coaching staff experienced over the last recruiting cycle and what was starting to transpire for the class of 2022 as well, that wasn't on Derek Chang. He was doing a great job as the player personnel development guy, just diagnosing these guys and putting them in front of the coaches to seal the deal to get the job done. Unfortunately, that part of it wasn't happening enough, but Derek Chang did a phenomenal job.
So there are your updates on the Texas football front. We've also mentioned today that the Texas basketball team had another game postponed. The TCU game has now been postponed. I wish I was kidding about something like that. Not that I would, but I wish I was. So now it's going to be three road games they're trying to reschedule. At Iowa State, already postponed now. At TCU on Saturday has been postponed.
I don't even know what to think about college basketball right now. You want to get excited for Texas hoops, but this is going to be the second essentially 2-week stretch that they've had to take off in the middle of the season.
Right. And somebody mentioned on the text line, I mean, we've already had Gonzaga Baylor taken from us. Yep. That was a 1-2 matchup. Because, like I said, college, that's what college basketball, even in a lesser form, watered down form, it is a sport that's not afraid to give you those matchups. It can afford to do it because it's got a real system at the end. And now that's being taken from us. The non-conference football games, okay, fine. I mean, those are cool sometimes. But I hate that these are being taken away because these are actually, there's more of them, right? It's what makes that sport interesting that you go, oh, look at that, Gonzaga's going to play Baylor. But like you said earlier, hopefully they can get Baylor and Texas out there twice. And then this SEC Big 12 thing, hopefully that can roll off without a hitch. But they may need to look at it. They may need to, and they'll just need to do the math, Trey, I guess, right? They'll get to it and say, hey, out of Texas and TCU or Texas and Iowa State, Texas, we presume, will be pretty good at that moment. Whichever one of those other teams is worse, you get rid of that game, right?
Yeah, that's what I was just looking up right now, is which of those two teams is worse, because they're both obviously down this year. There are some legitimate questions being asked of Jamie Dixon and whether he is the guy to help advance this program to that next level out of Fort Worth right now. And Iowa State is just a little bit down this year. They do still have some talent, guys like Solomon Young on the roster, but not enough going on in the perimeter for them. And just looking at the standings right now, Chad, Iowa State is actually winless in the conference, so you're probably accepting that TCU game more so if you're the Longhorns than you are Iowa State, even though TCU has kind of had Texas' number. Since Dixon and Chaka Smart have really gone up against one another, TCU will get hot from the outside and just shoot lights out and find ways to win those games even when Texas has more talent on the floor. So hopefully it's the Horned Frogs that Texas is able to make up a game with if they have to choose between those two to go along with that Baylor makeup.
Yeah, if I was Bowlesby and the Big 12 crew, I would just let Texas know that ahead of time. Like, hey, yeah. Shaka, if we have to get rid of a game, we're going to give you the best possible game conference schedule, conference record-wise.
Because that helps for whatever your RPI, your strength of schedule, all of those other computerized standings as they're trying to figure out where to put you in the NCAA tournament, what your ranking should be.
No doubt about it. Somebody suggesting on the text line the quiet assassins for the Texas defense coming up under Coach Pete.
People should consider quiet but deadly. Got a lot of power.
All right, Trey, speaking of the text line and people's thoughts, let's just reiterate our question of the week because I have a clarification question and then I think you have a proposal for the people.
Yes.
For the Texas folks, the question of the week is, what would you give up for your team to win a title? And we got a few ideas yesterday, Trey, that I think are cheating. And here's the cheating version. Some people want to exchange a conference, not conference, a championship, national title, or Super Bowl championship for one of their teams while making another one of their teams bad. Like, for instance, I love the Astros and I love the Texans. I'll take a Texan Super Bowl if the Astros win 20 games a year for the next two.
Joe Cook yesterday said he would remove the cheating scandal to not make the playoffs the next 3 years. What was it? No, a redo of Game 7 with Garrett Cole staying in the game and then no playoffs for the next 3 years. And that wasn't enough.
Correct. And so my question would be, is that really not in the spirit of the question? Because aren't we asking people, the question is, what would you give up?
Yeah.
Am I really giving something up if one of my teams goes bad?
No.
Okay.
It's not enough.
I'm just clarifying. So you have a proposal today for Texas football fans.
Texas football fans, we're going to strip everything else away. You don't have to worry about giving up a pinky toe, your middle child, annul a marriage, anything else like that. All you have to do is this. This is the sacrifice. You win a national championship in 2021, Sark's first year here. Oof. But in return, Texas A&M plays for a national championship within the next 5 years. Not this next year necessarily.
Wow.
But they have a chance to win a championship by the end of the 2025 season.
So let me make sure I'm clear on this. Technically, what you're saying there is Texas's title in 2021 could be over the Aggies.
I just said.
Right?
The exception is that they're not playing Texas in that game. So
they will not.
The 4 years that follow,
okay,
Texas A&M will play for a national championship.
Okay, so the Longhorns will win it in 21.
This is really going to gauge the pettiness of Texas fans.
But the Aggies will, you're not guaranteeing the Aggies win it. You're saying the Aggies make the title game.
Make the title game.
In the next 5 years, but it'd be four, I guess you're saying 4 years after that.
So let's say the 5 years after that. They make the title game by 2026.
In the next 5 years.
It'd be against Texas.
A&M.
They could have beat Texas in the final four.
Somebody just texted, done. Another one says, I'm cool with that with a hook'em and a thumbs up. Done, what's the downside?
I agree.
Now, I think that what's the downside might have been from an Aggie. Just to be fair. That is interesting. Well, and then let's turn it around. If you're an A&M fan, do you take the deal?
I think you do if you're an A&M fan. You are that much hungrier for a championship than Texas fans are.
Because you're sitting right now at number four. Would you argue you're actually kind of close and you can do it on your own and I don't need any of this help? Or, because this is saying that the rival that lives in your brain that you've been trying to get rid of, the shadow you're trying to get out of, blah, 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 whatever, they're going to win one before Jimbo gets one. But then you're guaranteeing that Jimbo plays for one in the next 5 years after that.
You know what? I'm having to modify this. This was too easy for Longhorn fans because most Longhorn fans are taking this right now.
We're going.
The modification is Texas wins in 2021. Texas A&M wins a national championship within 5 years after that. So Texas A&M actually wins a national championship
in
football.
All right.
Would you trade championship for championship if you're a Longhorn?
All right, now that's a whole nother question.
Because I feel like Aggies would take that deal in a heartbeat.
Someone texted, I'm out, Aggies suck, haha.
Thank you. Glad we have somebody who's standing strong.
That is funny. Somebody says, I'm a petty dude. Nah, 2006 was fine. That's what I asked you yesterday. If you've already seen it happen, how much of a thing is that? I'm a Cowboys fan. If you said, Chad, would you cut off a finger to see the Cowboys win the Super Bowl? And I'm like, would I cut off my finger to see something I've seen three times? No. No.
But and that's where I am with Texas football, too.
And that's where you'd have to ask me, right? Me and all the Aggies out there that you know, read all the time and we know it, and because Chris Bennett reminds us every other day. National championship, 1939 is the last one that they won. And since then, they have literally not been in a football game that had they won it, somebody would have said, you're the national champions.
Right.
It hasn't happened. So you'd be saying you give an Aggie an opportunity to win a football national championship, you would assume they're going to give a lot up. So I'm assuming the Aggies would take that deal retroactively, in reverse, that the Longhorns get their title, but that the Aggies play for one. Or in your version, maybe the Aggies get one. I would think they'd take that.
I would not trade championships as a Longhorn fan. I would take the championship with A&M playing for one, although that would certainly make me nervous, but I don't want to see you guys win it all.
Oh, well, that's petty of you. You'd get it first.
I know.
Okay. This says, is Texas still playing CFP quality football in those years? See, we don't know that. That's not the guarantee. You can't guarantee all of it.
That's the uncertainty.
That's your uncertainty part of it.
Texas could be playing them in the championship game. How much fun would that be?
That's why the question is crazy. What would you give up for your team to win a title? How about this, Trey? Real quick. If I get an A&M national championship, and this is music snob to music snob, you give me a musical punishment that I have to go through, and you'll give me a national title for my Aggies in football. I get the natty. What do I have to do musically for whatever? A year, 2 years?
For the rest of your life.
Oh, Lord. It's a long time. What? Go ahead.
You can never listen to Motorhead, Johnny Cash, hair metal.
Come on, man.
And that's it.
Mm. Yeah, that's pretty simple. Jimbo, you got to earn that money. Sorry. I'm sorry, brother. Dude.
Oh, man.
Dude, I can go to bed at night comfortably if my Aggies never win a national title. But if I can go to bed at night every night knowing that Folsom Prison Blues is out there and I can't listen to it, I think it might drive me crazy.
What about if I give you hair metal back?
No, man. You still took cash in Motorhead.
Yeah.
No. Jimbo, go to work. Jimbo, get to work. That's what I'd say. Get to work. All right, coming up, speaking of get to work, there's a guy in New York that no longer gets to work. The Mets have fired their GM for something terrible that he did with his phone back in 2016, and it has nothing to do with the election. We'll tell you what he did and if it was deserved. It's coming up next on The Horn.
Interpretation of this song is just stupid good.
I try to imagine like a real stuffy music fan the first time they heard her do this, because I bet they screamed and ran out of the room. Like, there's no way you could handle this if you were like a stereotypical standards kind of person. Summertime must be done a certain way. If Louis Armstrong's doing it, that's fine. If Ella Fitzgerald's doing it, that's fine. What is this? What is this screaming woman from Texas? She can't do this.
I didn't realize Barack Obama was such a new music snob, Chad.
I've never tried to do Barack Obama in my life. Is
he
that a good Barack
it.
Obama? Sweet. Happy birthday to Janis Joplin today. She would have been 78 years old. That is a show I would see. A cantankerous 78-year-old Janis at Antone's. just screaming at people. That'd be awesome.
I wonder if her voice goes Benjamin Button to where it sounds really old and raspy when she's on the younger side, if it actually starts sounding younger as she gets up there in the years.
I always picture Janice. That would be great if it like almost smoothed out. If it just kept going, it gets smoother and smoother. I've always pictured her as the kind that if she walked on stage and somebody screamed, "Play me and my Bobby McGee," she would cuss them out. I would always hope that that would happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or
piece of my heart. Get them out of here. Throw them out.
Or back in the 1960s, send a Hell's Angels member after that person for heckling her.
Exactly. Shout out to Janice today. Also, hope everybody is safe and dry out there. A little rain in the area today. Remember, the triple option comes up at 3. And since it's Tuesday, it is also Longhorn Blitz podcast night. If you love Longhorn football and you haven't listened to the Longhorn Blitz podcast, well, then you're partially lying to yourself. This is a great show. It is a great breakdown, football, X's and O's. Jeff Howe, Rod Babers, Matt Butler, just busting out lots of good Texas football. You know they'll be talking about the coaching hires, coaching staff, recruiting, Coach Sarkisian, all that good stuff. That's tonight at 7. All right, Trey, these are the kind of stories that sometimes people don't want to get into, but you and I don't care because we'll go uncomfortable if we need to. A little uncomfortableness happened to the New York Mets. They live in uncomfortable. They're used to this. Frankly, I was surprised that it was only this because it was the Mets. I figured, oh, my God, what did someone do with the Mets? The Mets have decided they have to fire a guy named Jared Porter, who was their GM until literally today, like this morning, last night, whatever. Back in 2016, Jared, he was not working for the Mets at the time. He was with the Cubs at the time. He met a woman on an elevator, oldest story in the world, right? He met a woman on an elevator. She also covered baseball. She covered baseball for an organization in a different country. We don't know what that country is, but English is not her first language. Let's just go there to kind of give you a scene setter. He sent explicit texts and images to this female reporter in 2016, and now he has been fired. So, Trey, if people want, they can go through a lot of these texts. I heard Jeff Passan reporting on it and others. This is 5 years ago that this happens, and now it's cost this guy his job. Am I completely nuts for asking if he has to be fired for this? Is that the craziest question in the world? Like, am I not seeing it for what it is? Like, does he have to go?
The time gap, I think, allows for that question. Here's the interesting thing, I guess, for me, really looking at the details of this story and how things played out. So he was a front office executive for the Cubs back in 2016, gets on an elevator with a female reporter who is covering baseball from another country. Well, they exchange numbers. At some point he starts texting her, and while it's clear that he's hitting on her and trying to set something up, it doesn't get to creep level until there's this mutual interest shown.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of the guy going Costanza from an episode from the last few years of Seinfeld and going out on a high note and realizing, okay, she's interested in me, I'm going to set my phone down, walk away, and then we'll reconnect in a couple of days or whatever, he takes her acceptance of what he's throwing at her up to that point and decides to just crank it up to 12.
Yeah.
And he sends three more pictures her way after he had sent one of him saying, "Hey, aren't I cute enough to be your boyfriend?" She's like, "Are you married?" He's like, "No." She's like,
he clarifies both ways, right? He asked her if she has a boyfriend. She didn't.
She's kind of reciprocating up to a point.
She asked if he was married. He said, "Nope."
But then he sends three pictures, one of which is just a shot of his bulge as he's laying back on a hotel room bed or somebody's bulge. You assume it's his. And she stops responding to him at that point. She's like, "Ooh, you just went over a line there.
Yeah, right.
We're probably done for, but at least for right now, I'm just walking away from this conversation." Well, he just bombards her with text messages after that.
Right.
And essentially,
over 60 at one point.
Doesn't
without
leave her
response.
Alone. And then at one point later on, after that moment, he is texting her about getting together at a hotel in LA, and he sends her 17 text messages. The first 15 are pictures of like what's going on around the hotel.
Of the badass hotel, yeah.
The 16th is of his crotch again on the bed, and the 17th is of a flaccid,
naked male crotch, which he, by the way, claims
stock photo.
Claims was a stock.
Stock photo.
Like, dude, if you're gonna send it, I'm also.
I didn't realize Clip Art was doing stock photos of that.
Can
guy.
I do that? I can just Google that. Like, I Google the word angry on my gift list.
Sorry, dude, you went way too far. You needed to put the phone down after she was even starting to reciprocate, versus thinking that it was a good idea to show her a picture of your bulge.
So at the point where she sends a text that says, "This is really inappropriate. Please stop sending me stuff," his response is, "Oh my God, I'm sorry," and he apologizes multiple times. That's why I asked the question of, now we're 5 years later, she says she doesn't want to press any kind of charges. She wanted to get the story out because she says, "I don't want this to happen to anybody else." I wish I could go back in time and like coach him up a little bit and say, "Dude, she agreed to meet you. It was her idea to meet you. The next step is, where could we meet? We both travel. What about this city? What about that city? What kind of food do you like? What kind of restaurants do you like? You want to go fancy? You want to go fast food?" Get the woman to start interacting with you on that. She's agreed to meet you. Like, there's one phrase. What's the phrase he texted that I couldn't understand because I'm an old man? Do you want more of me? What did he say?
Hold on.
Which I can't. I don't know how to interpret this. I've never dated on a text. I've never dated in social media space.
"You're gorgeous. Want more of me?" Question mark. And
see, again,
she said yes, explained to ESPN. Now, some of her explanations, well, after the fact, are a bit flimsy too. So she says yes.
Let me tell you what. If your response, now again, English not the first language. I'm going to give her a little bit of a pass there because she's trying to interpret. I would be trying to interpret as well. But Trey, my text would have had 50 words in it going back. Or at least, what does that mean?
Yeah.
Do you want more of me? What is that? That just seems like it just seems like an unnecessary thing to ask. Even if you're asking what I think you're asking, that's not the way to do it. Like, what are you talking about? Do I want what?
That seems fairly obvious to me, but perhaps the cultural difference is enough there.
But he responded, okay, once she said yes, his response was text after text after text after text of different stuff, including the bulge pictures, correct?
After she said yes to "Do you want more of me?" that's when he sends the three pictures.
So does that mean like he's got a group of friends that he sends bulge pictures to? Like, this seems like his thing, right? He lays in a bed, he takes a picture across his own body to the TV that's there in a hotel room or something, and then the crotch is involved. It's a character in his picture.
I had a buddy in college who used the scummy move of the first time that he was going there with a girl, telling them that he loved them, just to make sure to seal the deal or whatever. And we all told him that was awful. Like, you're gross of you to do that.
Yeah.
Because you know you don't mean that, but you're just trying to close the deal. This is this guy's attempt to close the deal.
The gross picture version. Yeah.
Is
right.
Sending a photo of his bulge and then following that by just saying, "like, question mark."
So let me ask it this way. If the Mets decide he can't work there, does this guy get a baseball job again? Like, if you're another team, would you be willing to have the discussion?
By the way, after he sent the "like" question mark after sending the picture of his bulge, she sends a laughing emoji and text yes.
Yeah.
So that kind of sets up for more of the creepiness, I guess.
And that's a tough one, too, because, again, English not the first language. Is she fully understanding what's going on? But, Trey, let's be real. There are people in this world that consider that back and forth acceptable. I'm not one of them, but that doesn't mean it's horrible and wrong and terrible and we need to throw someone's career down the trash. That's why I'm asking, where is he today? Where is he today in baseball terms? Because look, this is the Mets we're talking about. This is like doing something where the Raiders get rid of you in the NFL, right? The Mets are a mess to start with.
Mm-hmm.
This is not the... You know, this is not like the Yankees or Red Sox or somebody, Dodgers, whoever you want to say. The Cardinals firing somebody. This is the Mets. So I don't know how that all works. I wish both of them well moving forward. She was brave to let the story get out there because everybody's going to assume she's got an ulterior motive. But I'm with her. I hope nobody else goes through that. And for him, hopefully we get a lesson in just better coaching. Be clear. There's nothing wrong with being clear. Be clear with what you mean, and then don't send 60 texts before you get one back. There's the other rule.
Yeah, he went... Remember the scene from Swingers where Mikey gets the girl's number? And then
vaguely,
he just bombards her with phone calls that night. The answering machine keeps hanging up on him, and he calls again and calls again.
Is that Favreau?
More, yeah. more frustrated, it's Favreau, yeah.
I think that might be my favorite acting moment for Jon Favreau ever.
It's up there.
Because I love him. I love him in the Marvel stuff he's done. I love that character in Iron Man and everything. And I love some other things. Dude, that scene, I'll never forget the first time I saw it. I thought he was brilliant in that scene. Love that scene.
Yeah, that whole movie is...
Swinger's good.
It remains entertaining. We may have to review that one at some point this year because I've seen that movie a lot in my life.
Let's do that because I've only seen it like once or twice.
For the sake of this current story, this guy did that and he just didn't get it.
No.
After he was sending her text after text and she was clearly not responding anymore. Like at some point, you need to stop texting, dude.
Yeah.
All you're doing is not only harming your potential with her, you're... maybe screwing things up for the other opportunities, too, down the road.
Oh, my God. She said she'd meet you, dude. What kind of food do you like? It's really it. What's your favorite restaurant? She travels. She travels, and she's from a different country. There's no telling what she would answer you. Just start talking food, because she's agreed to meet you. She's agreed to meet you. Wow.
We should really, at some point, we should look up some of the worst attempts to... throw game of all time, because this Porter cat, he ends up there, unfortunately.
Oh my God, yeah, that is so not my world. I've never had game, I've never had a plan, I've never had a line, so I do get entertained by stuff like that when people are trying, but that's what his trying in 2016 gets him in 2021. The Mets need a new GM. All right, coming up, we'll get back to the Texas football discussion at 2 o'clock. By the way, one of our listeners has come up with a real sick scenario for the championship thing. How about, would you take a Texas national title, but you have to exchange it for A&M winning the title against Texas?
Nope.
Now, that's a deal to discuss.
You're going, a hell no.
You're going no right away.
Hell no.
Oh, look at that. If you can't have it, I don't want it. I don't want it if you have to get it too. What do you think of that one? Longhorn fans, Aggie fans, both sides of it. Maybe make it a Sooner Longhorn discussion. I know what you'd say if it's the Sooners in that discussion. We'll continue to throw that out. Our question of the week, what would you give up for your team to win a championship? Up next, where are we at in society? Another one of Trey's great interviews, this time trying to empower people that are in pain, like physical pain, to address the issue. That is coming up, especially if you're real active. You want to pay attention. This is The Horn.
I like to do a song of great social and political import. It goes like this. Oh, Lord, won't you buy me a Mercedes Benz? My friends all drive Porsches. I must make amends. Worked hard all my lifetime. No help from my friends. So, oh Lord, won't you buy me a Mercedes Benz?
Oh, you damn
oh, Lord,
right.
Won't you
Janis
buy
Joplin
me
would have been 78 years old today. Trey, she would have been 78 today. How old was Janis Joplin's voice when you heard her sing? If someone said, how old is that person? No matter what point in her career. How old did she sound to you?
60s, age of 60s, unless she's been working for at least a decade, if not more, in a smoky country and western bar. Then I would go early 40s or late 30s.
I think that's fair. Speaking of country western bars, it's also Dolly Parton's birthday today. We will get to Miss Parton in the show. And Robert Palmer has a birthday today. He's 72. I don't know what would happen if you got him and the women from the Addicted to Love video back together to rock them out in that, you know, makeup and the guitars and all that. Might not look the same, but Robert Palmer still rolling out there. I'm not sure if he's still performing or not. All right, a lot of good texts rolling in on the Specs text line. Most people do not want the deal that someone threw out before the break, and that deal was Longhorns win a national title in football, but the exchange is that the Aggies will win one after that, beating Texas to do it. Most every Longhorn we're hearing from says they would not give that up. So, including Trey, Trey's not going title for title on most things. That's been an interesting little twist on our question of the week. What would you give up for your team to win a title? And Trey just got cruel earlier when I asked him for a musical something to give up, and he was going to make me give up Motorhead and Johnny Cash for an A&M football title. Sorry, Jimbo, can't do it. I can't do it. Music's too important. All right, Let's coming up more on the Texas DC search. Apparently, they have found their guy. He was out west hanging with the Huskies, and now he's going to be headed to Austin. We'll tell you more about Coach Pete coming up. But right now, Trey's got Where Are We At in Society.
Where are we at in society today?
All right, Chad, I need to play a clip from my most recent episode from the Books on Pod podcast. Check out more at booksonpod.com or by searching Books on Pod with Trey Elling wherever you listen to podcasts. Today's episode that came out earlier this morning is with Dr. Aaron Horschig, who is a physical therapist and strength and conditioning coach. He's also the author of the new book, Rebuilding Milo, The Lifter's Guide to Fixing Common Injuries and Building a Strong Foundation for Enhancing Performance. Now, this book will be seen by athletes and those who are physically active first and foremost. But let me tell you, it is a great book for anybody who wants to empower themselves to help get over whatever constant, chronic, minor pain you're suffering in your back, hip, knee, ankle, shoulder, or elbow. It allows you to self-diagnose, activate, and strengthen the root cause of that pain. Here is part of my conversation with Aaron, starting with whether or not stretching is good for Achilles tendon pain, as well as busting a myth on the value of ice on an injury. Your section on ankle pain deals in large part with Achilles injuries. Why is stretching the calf a bad idea for an Achilles and really all tendinopathy injuries?
Yeah, the big reason for that is often because the reason that the pain started was because of compression at the backside of the ankle. So when you create a stretch of the calf muscles, you're taking that Achilles tendon and basically jamming it against the backside of the ankle bone. And what happens is that it can lead to sometimes a little bit more irritation for the certain types of Achilles tendinopathy. And what that does is just exacerbate the symptoms and makes it worse. And while you may get a little short-term relief, you're not getting much long-term relief. You're not really truly fixing the problem of that. So the idea is that we screen, we try to figure out what specific type of tendinopathy you're dealing with down there, and then try to go about fixing it a little bit differently. And oftentimes it's more of a load-related issue. Sometimes we can use a little heel lift in the back of our shoe. But I find that of all the ankle injuries people develop, and I'm talking again more so to people that would walk into the weight room, you're going to be dealing with tendinopathies. You're not usually dealing with sprained ankles in the weight room or things like that. So the ankle chapter specifically for my audience that I was writing with this book was more so dealing with the Achilles tendon, as that I found to be probably one of the most common issues. And this is more so for people that are over the age of probably 25. The Achilles tendon is not usually something that you see become injured with a young population.
You end this book with a hard conversation with some that dispels some myths about ice. Contrary to popular opinion, why is ice a bad thing to put on injuries and sore muscles?
And this is probably going to be a big eye-opening, mind-blowing discussion for a lot of people to hear, but ice is not the best way to fix an injury. And this is something that goes against everything we've been taught from a young age. You smash your finger in a door, you're told, put some ice on it. Your knee hurts after squatting, put some ice on it. We see all these images throughout our life. If you watch Michael Jordan, you know, after a game, he's got some ice on his knee. So why is ice so bad? Think about it like this. If you were to ask any medical doctor, what are the three stages of injury? Inflammation, and then rebuilding and remodeling. And what happens is that if you don't have inflammation, you don't have the rebuilding phase and the remodeling phase. You need inflammation. So inflammation is not a bad thing, despite what you've been told. You need inflammation in order to kickstart the healing process. Well, what happens is that when you ice a joint, you limit inflammation from occurring. You stop inflammation. Think about it like this. If you had a car crash on a highway, instantly the medical emergency vehicles are called to rush to the scene. You have the fire truck, the ambulance, the police department. Well, when you ice, it's basically like you just set up a roadblock on the highway, and all of the medical emergency vehicles, the cleanup crew, they're stopped from getting to the crash. They can't help the people that are injured. They're not going to clean up any of the debris that's scattered across the highway. They're just blocked. That's what happens when you ice. So you're delaying the healing process. So what we need to do in place is actually be proactive in finding pain-free positions and trying to move and create proper movement that will then amplify and optimize our healing. Here's another way to think about it like this. If you knew a big snow was coming, would you go out every single hour and brush off your front driveway? Or would you wait until there's 2 feet of snow piled up and then go out? I would say most people probably want to be a little bit more proactive and, you know, shove off a little bit of snow so they're not just like, you know, smashed with 2 feet of snow. Well, when you have an injury, you're slowly having the snow accumulate. And that's the swelling that comes along with the inflammation process. Swelling is not good nor bad. It's just there. It's a part that occurs with injury. Well, if you can be proactive and actually move well and find pain-free positions and create some muscle contraction with things like maybe a neuromuscular stimulation device, you can actually get ahead of the healing game, spark that healing process, and be better off in the long term than if you iced your knee or iced your low back.
And that is part of my conversation with Dr. Aaron Horschig on Books on Pod, booksonpod.com. The book is called Rebuilding Milo, The Lifter's Guide to Fixing Common Injuries and Building a Strong Foundation for Enhancing Performance. It empowers people suffering from back, hip, knee, ankle, shoulder, and elbow pain to self-diagnose, activate, and strengthen the root cause of that injury or that pain. We get into all of those different body parts throughout the course of this 45-minute conversation. Hear more, booksonpod.com, or by searching Books on Pod with Trey Elling, wherever you listen to your podcast. Chad?
Trey, let me see if I get this right. I've been coaching high school football in the great state of Texas for 35 years. I've won 14 district titles and 4 state championships, and this young buck is telling me ice is no good?
I know.
Come on!
I know. Water's good and ice is bad, Coach. It goes against everything that you were taught back in the 1970s.
That is fascinating. I love that dude had an analogy for his analogy.
Yeah, right?
His analogies were bringing analogies. That was awesome.
Russian doll of analogies.
It's a really interesting way to think. I'd never thought about it that way.
It's true, and that's actually the end of the conversation. We get into a bunch of other really cool stuff, and look, most of us are dealing with back pain, if nothing else. That is the start of our conversation. So if nothing else, go listen to the first 10 or 15 minutes, and you will likely greatly benefit from that and maybe be encouraged to go out and buy the book. It's a good resource.
The feeling that I just had, and hopefully the feeling you just had, is one that I've had plenty of times. Many of you have had it as well. It's that feeling when Trey's doing an interview, and it might not be something you cared about at the beginning. He makes you care about it, and so does the author, and their discussion is always great. Check out booksonpod.com. We mentioned Armin Katane earlier in that book about Tiger Woods. You can dig into that. Matthew McConaughey and Green Lights. We also have that one on hornfm.com on our page. Lou Diamond Phillips. There's just so many different cool interviews that Trey has done and he continues to do. So thank you, Trey, for that. And my knee feels better just listening to it. I feel like I'm a little more flexible and I'm not going to ice down tonight.
Well, perhaps it started in the hip, Chad.
Damn right. It always does. Always does. All right. Now we get back to Texas football. Apparently they know who the new DC is going to be. There was a Zoom call today. This is a very modern way to find out that Steve Sarkisian's on a Zoom call talking to media, and he said it was great to have this guy on board. So he's going to be the DC. We'll tell you who he is coming up on the Horn.